What are the missing links in our understanding of the sacred calendar? And I think a lot of us have been asking that same question over, you know, the past year or so, or more so, you know. And the question comes up when you realize that there's so many brethren who have rejected the CRC and the postponements, and yet, you know, we all have different ideas of what the replacement should be. So there's something missing there. And I believe that something is got to be in the scriptures. And this is just a possibility. Okay, so let's go back to the fourth day of Recreation Week and briefly review Genesis chapter 1, starting at verse 14. Okay, Genesis chapter 1, verse 14. And God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven. And then we ask the question, why? What's the purpose of them? Well, number one, to divide the day from the night, it says. Number two, let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years, in verse 15. And is the third reason, let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth. And it was so. So please note the order that this information is given. Number one, to divide the day and the night. Number two, for signs and seasons, for days and years. And number three, to give light on the earth. So now we ask the question, does that order imply a relative importance of the three functions? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. In other words, you know, are they in order of importance? I don't know what the answer is. Just say maybe. Okay, verse 16. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night. What's he referring to? The sun and the moon, obviously. And if you think about it, they only appear to us on earth to be the two great lights because they're relatively the closest to us, right? See the moon, about the same size as we see the sun. Everything else, you know, Venus and all of the other planets and stars all look smaller, but they're not smaller, okay? In reality, the sun and the moon are relatively tiny and insignificant compared with some of the other millions of vast suns and moons in the universe. And Susie wasn't here, but last night Trish and I watched one episode of the BBC series called Wonders of the Universe, and it's hosted by a young English astronomer by the name of Dr. Brian Cox, kind of annoying guy, you know, young fella, but still a lot of good information in there, enlightening information. I definitely recommend it. And so we ask a question, and does God mention some of these other massive suns and moons in the biblical recreation accounts? Well, yes, he does. And briefly, right here at the end of verse 16, he made the stars also. And God set them, all three, the sun, the moon, and the stars, in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. Now, we did seven calendar sermons, and we spent lots of time examining the scriptures describing the movements of the sun, our local sun, and our local moon. And that's great, you know, they're very significant in the calendar, in the determination of the calendar. But still, even after going through all of that, and again, we're left with questions that those scriptures that we went over have not been able to answer totally satisfactorily. And we still have these missing links, and especially with the timing of the new year. That seems to be the main difference. Now, I'm saying maybe now, this is a big maybe, because there's lots more work to do on it. Maybe the movements and the effects of the stars will help with our understanding of these missing links to fill them in, at least partially. And I say maybe because I'm still not sure of the detailed answers. I admit that. But what I am sure of is that God created those stars for good reasons, because he says so right here in Genesis chapter 1. He created those stars for good reasons, and not just to give some secondary nighttime light to us humans. That's part of it. We don't, when the moon is, you know, if you're a new moon time, there's not much in the way of light that gets to you from the stars. There's a bit, but, you know, nothing much. But the stars are very, very important. I'm not talking about in an astrological way. What we got from that documentary last night, and what I've got in my studies so far, is that the astronomical equilibrium of the Earth and the Moon and the solar system, in fact the whole universe, is dependent on the locations and the movements of this truly astonishing third scriptural grouping of the lights of the firmament of heaven. In other words, the stars. So, thinking about this, I feel that it is illogical for us to exclude the stars from the conversation, to exclude the stars from the second function that God gave them. In other words, for signs and seasons and days and years. And again, I'm not advocating astrology, and you'll see that as we go through. Look in the scriptures, in the 65 appearances of the word star or stars in the scriptures. And in the church in the past, whenever we see the word star in the Bible, we automatically think angel, right? That's what we think. We attribute the mention to an angel, but that's not logical either. Sometimes in the scriptures, a star means exactly that, a physical star. Now, we don't have time in a short Bible study like this one this evening to go through all the 65 star scriptures. You can if you want. But what I would like to do is to bring our attention to a few scriptures that mention some groups of stars, so that we call constellations. And Jewel and I had a little email conversation on this a couple of weeks ago, but it really sparked something in my mind there. So please turn to Job chapter 38. Job chapter 38. And if we don't learn anything else from this evening, I hope that it'll increase our glorification of God and his power, because that's what really comes out of this. Job chapter 38 and verse 1. Job 38 verse 1. Then the Lord, the Eternal, Yahweh, answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Gird up now your loins like a man, for I will demand of you and answer you me." And them's fighting words from the Lord there. And I don't think that he's saying this just to Job alone, because his four so-called friends, his fair-weather friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, Zophar, and Elihu, they'd been waxing eloquent, and you can see this all through the books of Job there, with their own opinions. Many of them, some of them were correct, some of them were misguided. Mixture of truth and error. Look out, you know. So, is what the Lord said there. Who's this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? We could also apply this to that Dr. Brian Cox, you know, on his evolutionary opinions. Okay, verse 4. Where were you? The Lord asks. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? What are the foundations of the earth? Declare, if you have understanding, who has laid the measures thereof, if you know, or who has stretched the line upon it? Whereupon are the foundations thereof fastened? What are the foundations of the earth fastened to? Or who laid the cornerstone thereof, when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy?
Amen.
Yeah, in that, recreation we. Now, so here you've got the Lord, you've got Yahweh asking these questions. Now there's some possibility, there might be some possibility that he actually answers his own questions further down in the chapter, when he mentions these four constellations of stars. So jump down to verse 31, please. Verse 31. Can you bind, he's talking to Job, he's talking to these four friends of Job as well. Can you bind the sweet influences of the Pleiades, or loose the band of Orion? Can you bring forth Matzaroth in his season? In his season is an interesting verse there. Or can you guide Arcturus with his sons? Now, he asked before, what are the foundations of the earth? What are the foundations of the earth actually hanging on? And we can say the same about the moon, we can say the same about the sun, we can say the same about the solar system and their gravity. So in other words, the local foundations of our earth and the moon and the sun and the solar system are, or should I say, the local foundations of our earth and the moon are the sun and the solar system and their gravity. That's what they kind of hang on, that's what they depend on. Now, I don't understand it all. I don't pretend to be an astronomer or a scientist. But if we look at the bigger picture, we look at the greater foundations of the solar system itself, that these greater foundations of the whole solar system are the stars and the planets and the moons of the Milky Way galaxy and their gravity. That's the way it works. It's all dependent on the gravity, the laws of gravity that God created. And going out even further, the even greater foundations of the Milky Way galaxy itself, and this is astonishing, the solar system takes about 265,000 years to make one. It's all going round in a huge circle. So you've got the moon going round the earth going round the sun, and the sun and the Milky Way going all the way around, and the Milky Way itself is going round something, I have no idea. But what they showed, that it's the centre of the Milky Way, the very centre of it, is actually a black hole they discovered. And it's just astonishing, how that gets into there. So the even greater foundations of the Milky Way galaxy are the stars, the planets, the supernova of the local universe and their gravity. I mean, it's so big, but it's all based on the same law. As you drop that spoon on the floor, and gravity pulls that to the floor. It's exactly the same. It's either tiny or it's vast. It's absolutely huge. Anyway, again, if, and I'll say this for Susie's benefit there, if you're interested in looking at it, and it'd be great for the kids too, the power and the effects of gravity, check out this Wonders of the Universe episode about gravity. It's called Falling, and you can get it on the internet, and you can view the whole thing on the internet. Okay. So now we're still in Job 38, and now we come to an amazing verse here. And you have to read this verse in context with the previous verses, not totally on its own. Verse 33, do you know, he's saying to these five people, do you know the ordinances of heaven? Can you set the dominion thereof in the earth? So what's he talking about here, the ordinances and the dominion and the heaven? He is talking about his ordinances, like his laws and his dominion, as given from his throne in what we call the third heaven, right, where he lives. But because of this context of this verse, following that listing of those four constellations, we can be quite sure that he's also relating this to the physical, visible heavenly bodies located in what we call the second heaven. In other words, those four, the Pleiades, Orion, Maseroth, and Arcturus, just examples of those stars and star clusters. So what is the Lord doing here? What is he doing? He seems to be asking Job and his friends, and perhaps Dr. Brian Cox as well, and the Jews, and today's Church of God ministers, and us who are sitting here this evening, looking down and saying, do you men, do you human beings, you puny human beings, think that you have the power to even begin to understand the ordinances that I've created and set in motion by means of the lights of the firmament of heaven? Have we even got the power to even understand these things? Or do you think that you have the authority, and this is where it comes into the calendar thing here, do you think that you have the authority to set or to change my dominion of my ordinances, which I have revealed and timed and controlled by, or I have revealed them by the sun, moon, and the stars, and I've timed them and controlled them by the sun, moon, and the stars? Human beings do not have that authority. Even God's people do not have that authority. But the authority that we do have is twofold. Number one, and we know what these things are because we've all been through them lately. Part one, to reject the obviously incorrect changes made by the Jews and adopted by the mainstream Church of God groups. And part two, to restore God's true calendar timing to the best of our ability. Now, part one is a relatively easy part. Not easy, it's tough. We've been through some heartbreaks over the last weeks and months. But part two is not so easy. I mean, part one, we research it, we come to believe it, and we come to reject what is false. But part two is restoring God's true calendar timing is not the easy part. And just possibly, is what I'm saying tonight, is that the answers may lie in a deeper biblical study of the stars. In the meantime, we need to be doing our best, right? So we can't just sit there and say, well, we reject that, so we're not going to keep the holy days until we find out what the replacement should be. We make our best estimate of what the replacement should be, and we do that until God shows us otherwise. In the meantime, we keep on digging, right? We keep on digging. But again, I want to say that I'm not advocating astrology. I'm not going to be looking into astrology. I sometimes wondered why the Lord mentioned such things in His Word. You know, why did He even mention these star clusters, and He gave them these names? I thought that they were pagan, heathen names. And in my own ignorance, I thought that constellations per se were astrological, not astronomical, and therefore that they were inherently somehow sinful. But it is true that some of the Greek and English names and their wrong uses, obviously assigning heathen gods, you know, assigning these star clusters, giving them heathen names and making gods out of them, obviously that's wrong. That is astrology. But the constellations themselves are merely groups of stars as viewed from the earth. There's nothing magic about them. There's nothing weird about them. In fact, when you look at what you think is, you know, we might call it the plow or whatever, and we look at it up there in the heavens and we think, look, yeah, you know, you can imagine it in your mind's eye, you know, what the plow looks like. But those stars, as you know, they're not even close together. You know, some of them might be relatively close, like, so you've got that big box part of the plow, and, you know, this star in the bottom left-hand corner might be reasonably close, and the one in the top left-hand corner might be light years further away, you know. So they're not even close together. In general terms, that's true. So it's whenever we see them, we're seeing them as viewed from the earth, right? And it's good to remember that because, you know, they're really nothing. I mean, they are incredible. They really are. But the thing to remember is that they are actually astronomical, and that therefore they are not inherently sinful. So there's not a problem. It's easy to understand why, you know, the ancient mariners, you know, out there on the ocean would, and they realized how solid in the heavens they were, or comparatively solid anyway, that they would ascribe names, imaginary names and pictures to them in order to identify them easily and remember them. And they'd be able to know, you know, what's north, south, east and west, and know how to get from A to B with the help of the stars. Clever stuff. I don't understand that either, but you know, they didn't have GPS in those days, so that's what they had, and they knew how to do it, you know. And that's exactly what Columbus discovered North America using those things. Okay. It's also interesting that different cultures have different ideas of what the constellations picture. Okay. Some will say, you know, this is a ram or this is a lion and all the rest of it. And some of them, you know, you get one culture agreeing with another on certain ones, but not on all. So I'm saying that because the actual names are not really that significant. The English or the Greek names that we have for them are not they're not really significant, you know, except those that the Lord Yahweh specifically mentions. But even then, he mentions them when we read them there in Job chapter 38. He mentions them in kind of a tongue-in-cheek way. He brings them up, as, you know, for the purpose of saying, do you guys have the power to do these things that I've done? You know, but again, just to tie it down, when individual stars and planets or supposed groups of stars and planets are deified, and when they're thought to have prophetic significance, or the people ascribe prophetic significance to them, that's where we need to draw the line. You don't have to turn there, you're very familiar with it. Jeremiah chapter 10 and verse 2. Thus says the Lord, learn not the ways of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. We've just been through a time where people are talking about blood moons, and, you know, that are they significant or are they not, you know. And as far as I know, nothing major, you know, the world didn't end. I'm not laughing at it, you know, only that we have to be careful of taking these things too far, or, you know, our supposed significance of these things too far, because it's been done over and over again over the years, and it's come to nothing. But I want to talk about, just a little bit there before we finish, I want to talk about that word Matzaroth. Let's just reread Job chapter 38 and verses 31 and 32 again. Can you bind the sweet influences, what does that mean, of Pleiades, or loose the bands of Orion? Can you bring forth Matzaroth in his season? And again, that's in his season is an interesting phrase in this regard. Or can you guide Arcturus with his sons? Now, I think before I was familiar with this, these verses, I think I recognized the Pleiades, you know, the reference to the Pleiades and Orion I'd heard of, less so Arcturus, but I'd never heard of Matzaroth before. I think when Jewel mentioned it, I had to go and look it up, because it wasn't one of those scriptures that stuck in my mind. And I think it's kind of foreign to most of us, you know. What is this Matzaroth? We don't know. Most Bible versions leave it untranslated. I went through all of the ones I have access to, and the majority of them leave it untranslated. And some give it a group name. Some say it means constellations. Some say it means stars. But that's just... but it's interesting, though, and there's a couple of reasons I don't agree with either of those. Let's go to Job chapter 9. Job chapter 9. Because three of these constellations are mentioned here. Let's start in verse 1. Job chapter 9 and verse 1. Then Job answered and said, I know it is so of a truth, but how should men be just with God? Jump down to verse 6. Still referring to God here. God which shakes the earth out of their place, and the pillars thereof tremble. We've got, you know, we've got these ideas again of, is the earth supported somehow by astronomical pillars? If you can keep that in mind. And again, what are these pillars? And those pillars, once again, are or is the force of gravity. Verse 7, which commands the sun and it rises not, and seals up the stars, which alone spreads out the heavens and treads upon the waves of the sea. So when he's talking about the heavens here, again, I believe that he's talking about the physical second heaven with all of the stars and the planets and the moons. And they have a huge effect on the waves of the sea as well. Just as an aside, one of the things that came out of this program that we watched last night is that you're all familiar with the pull of the moon on the Earth, the gravitational pull. And as it comes round, it literally pulls the water of the oceans out towards the moon. And so we come around, we have these high tides, we have these low tides, and depending on the ellipse of the moon, how close it is to the Earth, we have these super low tides, or we have these spring and neap tides that are huge. But what he pointed out is that the gravitational pull of the Earth on the moon is so huge that the moon has tides too. But the moon's tides are not water, because there's no water there. What there is rock and stone. And actually, the moon is actually distended, actually pulled into like a rugby ball shape. I mean, that's overstating it, because it's only by probably meters, but it actually stretches the moon as it comes around. Mm. Amazing, eh? So, okay. So treads upon the waves of the sea. Verse 9, which makes, and here they come again, Arcturus, Orion, and Pleiades is actually mentioned here in the opposite order, and the chambers of the south. Now, when he says chambers of the south, not totally sure what he's talking about. Different ideas on that. Could be the stars in the southern portion of the sky as viewed, you know, from, you know, what we call the Holy Land or the Jerusalem area. Or it could even possibly be the stars in the southern, as viewed in the southern hemisphere, which is unknown to most of the people in the northern hemisphere at that time. Anyway, interesting. But the other interesting thing is the word Matzeroth. Matzeroth is not included there. Okay, it's not included there. But what is notable is, okay, it's not included there, but the way it's placed and the way it's phrased in the Job 38 listing, that has led some Bible scholars and Bible commentators and translators to the very, what I believe is a very plausible belief, that Matzeroth is not to be translated into the English constellations or stars, but rather that it's the Hebrew name of another constellation, a fourth constellation. And we don't know what that is. Now, the King James Version and most other versions that I have access to, they give the names of the other three, Orion and Pleiades and Arcturus, they give them those names, those, I call them Greek / English names, Pleiades, Orion and Arcturus. But if you go to Young's literal translation, it leaves all of those four untranslated. So if you read it, you know, you can go into Strong's and it'll give you the names of them. Young's literal translation, and possibly, I don't know whether yours does as well, leaves it in the Hebrew. So it says, Job chapter 38, verse 31, "Dost thou bind sweet influences of Kimah, K-I-M-A-H, or the attractions of Kesil, K-E-S-I-L, dost thou open?" Verse 32, "Dost thou bring out Matzeroth in its season, and Aish, A-Y-S-H, for his sons dost thou comfort?" See, he's left them. He doesn't really know. He's not really sure what star cluster to assign them to. So he's left them the way they are in the original Hebrew. Okay. Interesting. You know, interesting to think about. Now, there's a similar Hebrew word, and it's matzala, M-A-Z-Z-A-L-A-H. No Americans here, is there? Let's say Z. M-A-Z-Z-A-L-A-H, and that's Strong's 4208, and it's only found once in the Bible, in 2 Kings chapter 23. So if you just turn there, and it's just a one verse. 2 Kings chapter 23 and verse 5. And you'll see how it's translated here. It's translated, okay, let's read it. 2 Kings chapter 23 and verse 5. And he put down the idolatrous priests whom the kings of Judah had ordained to burn incense in the high places in the cities of Judah and in the places round about Jerusalem. Them also that burned incense unto Baal, to the sun, and to the moon, and to the planets, that's Matsala, and to all the host of heaven. So you see, so it's Matsala there, similar word, and it's grouped under the term planets. Could it be something else? I don't know. We can see just by that scripture on its own that astrology and the deification of heavenly bodies is condemned right there, and obviously in many, many others as well. So we should be very, very careful, as you know. I'm going to dig into this over the next couple of months and see if anything, you know, anything jumps out at me, and I ask you to do the same. But we should be very careful to stay away from believing that the sun and the moon and the planets and the other moons as well. And you know, we hear them talking about that the sun and the moon or a planet is in a certain constellation. So you might see that constellation, I don't know, Jupiter might, you know, in its way around might be in Orion or something like that, might be in the area of a certain constellation. Is that prophetically significant? I would say no. You know, I don't believe it is. I don't, you know, it's like saying, well, that car that just went down the street is significant, you know, that it's got some meaning to it. I don't believe that God is telling us that. What I am saying though is that there is significance in the stars as far as the setting of the calendar is concerned. And I believe there is astronomical significance to that, to the calendar and the arrival of God's new year. And that's what I want to be looking at. I kind of interested in that Job 38, where it talks about the sweet influences of the Pleiades, or Kima in Hebrew. Is it possible that when the Pleiades become visible, possibly when the spring arrives, what's the sweet influences mean? You know what I mean? I don't think that it has any, I don't think it has any influence on human beings or on human behavior. But I mean, we all feel nice. We all, you know, once the winter's gone and the spring comes, we all feel better. And just to round this out now, and you know, we can have a little chat about it. But I remembered reading somewhere that a certain star or constellation only becomes visible at the vernal equinox, and that this is mentioned somewhere in the scriptures. Sent that out to my daughter Joanne, and she said that she looked into it and she thought that it was Sirius, but she didn't give me any scriptures on it. And I don't know what was the one that you saw.
I thought it was Aries.
Aries. Yeah, I don't know. But okay, so this study then is kind of a, you know, it's the beginning of a work in progress. And so, you know, we'll leave it there. I'm interested in your ideas, your questions, your comments, either, you know, right now or anything that you want to email to me later, definitely worth looking into.
It says in Jeremiah 31:35 that the moon and the stars are ordinances. It's just in there, you know, when you have it in your little thing.
In the ordinances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
So an ordinance then is, it's like a law of God, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, that's interesting, yeah. You can't see the sun, you know, and you know what the ordinance is. You don't know what the law is. You can see the moon.
Yeah.
Or the stars, you've got to know what the ordinance is that's related to that.
Yeah.